Welcome to episode 47 of the Dad's Army podcast. James is so busy planning for Bressingham this year, he's left it up to me to be able to sort out a little special podcast for you. So before we get into things, take it away, Mr. Flanagan.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run?
Just before I start, just a very special thank you to Mr. David Gladwin. Hello, David. Thank you very much for your kind donation to the Dad's Army podcast. Any donation that is made goes directly into the running costs of the podcast. The podcast is proving to be incredibly successful. You'll notice it in a few top 10 charts on iTunes and Podomatic and all these kind of things. So your dedication as our valuable listeners is very much appreciated. And these donations really do help keep the podcast on the air and keep the spirit of Dad's Army living on the old internet audio waves. So thank you very much indeed, David. And if you would like to make a donation to the podcast, there's a donate button on the podcast website. That's dadsarmypodcast.com. You can pay through PayPal, so it's all nice and secure, and it saves James remortgaging his house, so it's all good. So thank you very much. Right, this podcast, it's a bit of a special one. I hope you enjoy it. I had the pleasure of going along to the Heritage Foundation's tribute day to Jimmy Perry and David Croft. You might recall I mentioned this in a previous podcast. It was a very, very nice day, and what I thought I would do is sort of give you an idea of what it's like to be a fly on the wall at one of these events. And so coming up, you're going to hear highlights from the day, and basically a number of actors who have worked with Jimmy and David over the years in different programs, including Dad's Army, get up on stage and share their memories. Jimmy and David were in attendance, and at the end they went up and collected some champagne, which you will hear. I'm not going to talk any more through this. We'll just listen to it as it was recorded. The quality varies. You'll have to put up with lots of clinking from waiters taking plates in and out of the venue during speeches, and the occasional loud actor having a conversation when they shouldn't. But I hope all the same you get to enjoy the memories of some wonderful stars: Paul Shane, Sue Pollard, Ruth Maddock, Harold Snowd, who was production manager and director on some Dad's Army stories for the first 4 years of his show. He went up and recorded his memories. The legend that is Bill Pertwee also gave a very moving account of how the work of Perry and Croft has enabled him to pursue some very commendable charity work, which you will hear all about from Bill. But we kick off with an exclusive interview, an introduction to the event, by none other than two stars of the show, Frank Williams and Pamela Kendall.
Hello, you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast, and I have the pleasure of being joined by two of the wonderful stars of the series. We have Pamela Kendall, who played Mrs. Fox, and Frank Williams, who played the wonderful Reverend Timothy Farthing. How are you both?
I'm very well, thank you. Lovely to be here.
I'm okay, I think I'm getting older, that's my problem.
Now, could you just tell us, why are we here today? What's this event in aid of?
Well, it's in aid of, to my mind, two of the greatest scriptwriters we've had in this country of comedy, David Croft and Jimmy Perry.
Yes, lovely people. I've known David Croft for too many years to remember. And Jimmy, we've been friends for a long time, and he was the one, well, it wasn't, it was David Croft, because I did a thing for Ian Carmichael in a series he was doing. I was a fortune teller, and at the very end of this episode, I had to look at the audience and say, it would all come right in the end. And David Croft happened to be in the audience, and he wanted somebody to say, have you got any sausages, Mr. Jones? And that's how I came to go to Dad's Army.
Oh, with a cheeky wink, and
yeah,
you still got that wonderful
cheeky wink. That was it, yes.
And Frank, how did you meet them both?
Well, I did one episode of Hugh and I for David, and of course I knew Jimmy when he was running the Repertory Theatre in Watford. So that's, and he's always been enormously loyal to all the people who worked at Watford, and I think that's how I got in. See, the thing about this business is you never know. You think a week in rep in Watford, what's
thank you for that. And it's wonderful, wonderful. And Jimmy and David have been so loyal to me and to Frank.
Yeah.
We've struck up a great friendship with them. And I love David very much, and so do I love Jimmy.
And what do you think, just to sum up, what's the success of their comedy? Why now do so many generations of fans keep discovering their comedy and loving it so much?
Because it's based on character, I think, and the characters are funny, and they interact with each other, and also it's all family comedy, so that anybody can watch it.
Thank you both very much indeed for joining. Have a lovely day.
Thank you very much.
Hello there, this is James. Yes, I'm very sorry to interrupt Oliver's podcast, but didn't really have a choice here. You're about to hear a recording that features Frank Williams and Harold Snowd. Frank's up first, and no problem with that, but Harold's is particularly difficult to hear. Now, I haven't deleted it completely because if you concentrate hard enough, you can make out what you're saying, and there are a couple of really interesting and good stories there, so that's why I've left it in. But just wanted to give you another warning. Anyway, sorry, Oliver, for interrupting your podcast. Sorry, won't happen again.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, just a sort of a pre-melon delight for you. Will you please welcome to the stage Frank Williams.
Said, we're here today to pay tribute to two of the true greats of British television. But what I want to say about David and Jimmy is to remark on their extraordinary loyalty to all the people who worked with them. I first worked for David when I did one line in A Hue and I, and I never dreamt what that might lead to in future years. Like many other people who worked in the Croft Perry Productions, I first knew Jimmy when he was running the Repertory Theatre at Watford. And he once told me that it was a performance I gave at a play called Honeymoon Beds that inspired him to cast me as the vicar. I never quite seen the logic of that. Honeymoon Beds for a vicar, that's the series. But not only a vicar, they then promoted me, and I became a bishop in New Radbourne. I've still got the bishop's ring to prove it. So I suppose all that's left for me now is the Archbishop of Canterbury. But I'm going to finish because I know you want to get on with life. I just want to say thank you, David, thank you, Jimmy, for all the wonderful parts you've given to us to play in your series. And to say that I hope you both have a great time today in this lunch, which is so deservedly in your honour.
Before lunch, a terrific supporter of the Heritage Foundation, would you please welcome producer and director Harold Snowd.
Finally, found a place in Soho, and I wasn't stopped up. And
turned to me and he said, I'm not going to give you a present, Al, but instead you could direct an episode of You and I Spy, which he obviously realised would be far better for me than a box of chocolates or Singapore or open flowers. And the episode went very well indeed, and subsequently I worked as a production manager on Dad's Army, and he let me direct 6 episodes of that. As a result of this, BBC promoted me to the role of producer-director, a job I carried out for 26 years, thanks to David, on umpteen different series until I reached the age when the BBC decides, I'll stop again, until I reached the age when the BBC decides that I'm going to have to retire or be shot. In 1973, the BBC decided they'd like to try for radio version of the first series of Dad's Army. As David and Jimmy were up to their eyes writing the 6th television series, David and Jimmy asked me whether myself and my writing partner, Michael Knowles, we would take on the task of rewriting 10 of their original scripts for radio. We agreed to do so, and the BBC were very happy with the results, so much so that we eventually rewrote 67 episodes. This was yet another example of David and Jimmy's generosity to others, which is referred to later. Incidentally, not only come up with some fascinating characters, that they cast a show, but they're very quick to pick up on any mannerisms of the actors and to incorporate them in the roles they were playing. I mean, in Dad's Army, for example, well, you may know this, of course, obviously, but Arthur Lowe was quite pompous in real life. I never forget the first day's film we did in Thetford, and I was sitting on the coach outside going out to the army area where we were filming, and the coach had a lot of people in on, and he was late as usual, Arthur, because he probably had something wrong with his breakfast. But he was sitting on the coach for about 10 minutes, and then Arthur came out, the last person to say. And as he came onto the coach, the extras called out, "Morning, Arthur." He sat down alongside me and he said, "Arthur, I'd love to change." Another quick example, Don the Measurer was very reluctant to have anything to do with changes. And that's an expression that happens a lot in the series is, "Do you think that's wise?" Came about because whenever David or Jimmy wanted to make a minor alteration during rehearsals to a script, he'd say, "Do you think that's wise?" And he's also the most impractical person I have ever worked with. Jim was an episode where Bob, Pike gets called in with Bob, and the rest of the two have to actually try and get him out to help. And it was deliberately written so that John wasn't involved at all. It was pulled up to the barbed wire quite deliberately because they knew that in actual fact if he actually assisted in this trying to get Pike out of the box, it would all go horribly wrong. He was very practical. I used him at a Dugenvis show subsequently, and they had a scene where he was standing at the foot of the bed, John, and pointing a revolver at Jimmy and David, saying, "Hand over the jewellery." And we were rehearsing with this, and he suddenly turned to me, John, and he said, "Just a minute, Hal," he said, "how am I going to take the jewel when I'm holding the revolver?" And I said, "You use your other hand." And he went, "Oh, yeah." But anyway, Jimmy and David are absolutely wonderful. They're brilliant writers. They finished up with a classic sweet show, much loved by the viewers. And as I said earlier, they're very clever because they actually wrote stuff that was already period, meaning that it never really taken. Basically, they were making shows that appealed to all ages and giving us comedy that was fun. And how sad these days that isn't always the case. Bring back the old days, although they're unlikely to find another Croft and Kenny.
Vicky Michelle.
Thank you very much. Now, I wasn't going to do this, but fuck it, I am. Listen very carefully. I should say this. But you know, I'd like to start by saying how delighted I am to have been asked to pay tribute to David and Jimmy. Not only because David was so instrumental in launching my own career as a casting liaison vet in LOLO, because, in my opinion, together, he and Jimmy are largely responsible for actually creating the golden age of comedy. Yeah. Unfortunately, I never got the chance to actually work with Jimmy firsthand, but I used to see him at the BBC, and he'd always come in, and I've always watched his shows, and also his partner, the lovely Mary Husband, who I had the pleasure of working with on the two Ronnies, and she was costume designer, probably one of the best, if not the best.
Yes!
She did most of Jimmy and David shows. And Jimmy, I mean, I used to watch not just our show, but the ones that Jimmy and David had done, and I learned so much. So thank you, Jimmy, for teaching me so much, also for being so lovely whenever I've seen you at the Water Rats, and being the perfect gentleman, always. But really, I mean, I was involved with David, the wonderful David Croft. I first met David at a reading for a new comedy series about a hairdresser, produced by the lovely Harold Snowd, and starring Roy Kinnear. Now, it was quite a harsh audition process. We all queued up at the BBC, and we went up one by one, and they eliminated us. And then I was down to the last two, and then the last one. So Harold came down and he said, oh, thank you, 99.9% you've got this. So I waited to hear from the agent, and I got a call back, and they decided to go through the process again. But this time, David was there. So we went through the process, thinking, oh, yes, 99.9%, I've got this. And we did. So I read with confidence, but didn't get the part. I know. My next encounter with David was for the casting of a series called Come Back, Mrs. No, which was set in space with the lovely Molly Sugden and Ian Lavender, among several others, including Gordon Kay. Now, this time, I was up against my sister, Anisha, and I heard later that David couldn't make up his mind who to choose. But who got it? Anne! Lost out again! And she had the role of Scarlet Dare. But there was a role in this series of a French-made robot, which Anne said to David, Vicky, have you done it? And David went, yes. So I played a French-made robot. Do you remember this, David? I had to take my clothes off. I had to take my clothes off. And they sort of were going to make me fake boobies, but he looked too rude. So I ended up with them wearing bra and pants at the end. But then, of course, Lola Lola was being cast, and David was French, Vicky Michelle. So I went to read for the part of Yvette and Michelle of the Resistance. And I got it, thank you. I mean, I suppose it's sort of destiny at the end of the day. I mean, what a successful series to have been in. But also, it's, you know, David and Jimmy, it's their meticulous detail in casting that provides us another reason for the Croft and Perry success. All of us in their shows had to be exactly right for the roles. Not nearly right. So you only have to look down the various cast lists to see iconic names, Ken Connor, Jack Hay, John Lemessurier. I mean, they had a fantastic cast. They made these people household names. You know, apart from Ken Connor, you know, I mean, the famous ones already. But I mean, we were all treated as part of David's family. As a producer, there was and is nothing David does not know about the business. He was always on top of every detail. He treated us like his extended family. And whenever we were filming in Norfolk, he used to, him and his lovely wife Anne used to invite us over to the Croft family home with all his children. And we had a wonderful time. They really were the most wonderful hosts. David came over to me and said, Vicky, your French accent's wonderful, but we can't understand what you're saying. So I had to anglicise it slightly. And then everyone was getting a catchphrase except me. So I went up to David, I said, oh, David, could I have a catchphrase? Yeah, they were trying to be naughty. I said, oh, please, 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 David, can I have a catchphrase? No, darling. So I read my script and there was O-O-O-H, Rene. Maybe I could elongate it a bit. And I watched the wonderful Rose Hill. Now, Rose Hill would have something like, her dialogue would be, oh, the flashing knobs, okay? So, oh, the flashing knobs. But when Rose came to do it, it was, oh, the flashing knobs. So we all learned to extend. You've got more camera time. So, oh my God, brilliant. Okay, so I started elongating. Oh, Remy. Oh, Remy. David, let me have it. Oh, Remy. And then we had a lovely director called Robin Carr. He said, Vicky, don't you think this would be good if you sat down behind the bar and when Gordon comes through the door, you just hear this roar. So Gordon comes in behind the bar and oh, Remy! Hey, let me have it. This is wonderful. Because, David, if you work at something, David will let you have it. So my catchphrase became, by default, oh, Remy, and thank you for letting me have it. David, oh yes, David, he noticed everything on the shows. And we've been doing a tour of Hello, Hello. And so I remember we went on a long tour, and then we had to do one of the series. And we were filming outside. And I'd gone up to Gordon, and having been on stage, just came up and went, oh, Renee, all of me, kiss me, do also sing, but got me wild with raging desire. David came up whispered in my ear and he went, Vicky, you're not on stage now. So true. And you just, you know, bring it down for the camera. He never, ever missed a trick. He was a truly wonderful director, writer, everything. And we all know how wonderfully funny Croft and Perry scripts are, but it's not as simple as that. They are funny because they are brilliantly written and structured. There's a start, a beginning, an end. Also, they transcend time and have that laugh-out-loud factor that we miss so much today. I remember Gordon Kay saying to me, do you know what, Vicky? This is going to be our pension. And at that time, I was so young, I didn't really realise what he meant, how true. We sold to over 80 countries. And then, and it was 80 countries. And so we get repeats from that, and then it's repeated on television. And also we had sell-out theatre tours with standing room only. You know, when you're an actor and you're getting millions of viewers a week, it's very hard to visualise that. And we're all very young at the time, so you don't really realise that, oh, there's millions of people watching you. But when we were doing the stage tour, you actually realised with packed audiences how fantastic the show was. But not just our show. I mean, it's true today as ever. When you also, I mean, a lot of you might have caught the recent tour of Hello, Hello. You've got Dad's Army and Heidi High. All going around the theatres now and packing out, which just shows how important, you know, these shows are. They're as popular now and getting the same audience reactions as they did when they were first written. There is no greater tribute to David and Jimmy than this. Truly, they are the real icons of British comedy. And I would like to say, Jimmy and David, thank you for the laughs. Thank you for teaching me so much. And particularly to you, Mr. Croft, thank you for my pension.
Will you please welcome to the stage, as she's going to sing and dance and take her clothes off, the wonderful Sue Hart.
fantastic. You know, I'm probably sure it happened as well with Vicky and all of our shows, and we always used to have to do a warm-up, didn't we? I'll tell you my warm-up. I hope you like it. It's very sophisticated and full of, you know. What was it? In the field, in Huddersfield, was a cow who wouldn't yield. It wasn't that it couldn't yield, it didn't like its Huddersfield. Thank you. Right, and we're ready to go now. Next Easter. So, this is for David and Jimmy. Probably nobody else will understand any of what I'm going to say, but this is just for you too. Now, what do you say to two men who've had every gong going? Well, this is what I'm thinking of saying. I've been doing my time, musicals, pantomime, when my agent, he rang me one day. Richard Stone was his name, at the top of his game. And he said, I've got something to say. I have two great writers who often invite us to watch men get angry with Jerry. You know, that's the wall. I suggest that a meet would be right on your street. Say hello to Dee Croft and Jay Perry. Needless to say, I was so thrilled that day when I climbed all the stairs to Jim's flat. And for those of you who have climbed in, it's about 140 of you. Anyway. With my hair in a black bowler hat. Having written Dad's Army, they thought I was balmy. I suppose I did look aside. With my long furry coat, I resembled a goat. No wonder I gave them a fright. To cut to the chase, things happened apace. I was asked to appear on TV with Simon and Barry and Jeffrey and Paul and Ruthie, Dee Felix and me. Needless to say, we got on straight away. And each day we all had a ball. We were happy to work, we never did shirk. And when we'd done, we all felt 10 feet tall. We were given a chance to act, sing and dance, and we certainly loved every minute. We were guided so well, it could have been hell, but with them, we were in it to win it. I can't thank you enough for teaching us stuff. You really are right as a part. I can honestly say, whether home or away, I love you with all of my heart.
Please welcome the lovely Ruth Madden.
In 1963. I was raw from RADA. I had done the black and white minstrels, but I still wanted to learn about the business. And I came into contact with one of the greatest teachers that there's ever been, Jimmy Perry. I went into pantomime. And subsequently, I did about three or four pantomimes for him. And musicals. Jimmy left Watford Rep in about 1964. And then eventually teamed up with another great legend of our business, Mr. David Croft. I remember meeting Mr. Croft at Watford Rep at a last night party of the Panto. And it was so amazing, this director from the BBC. And we were so impressed. And there I met Frank Williams, who's here now tonight. Today, I should say. It was a magical time to meet all these wonderful people. And then I got the call in 1979, actually. I got the call to go into a wonderful series that Mr. Perry and Mr. Croft wrote, Heidi Hart. I was deeply grateful because I was nearer 40 than 30, and I didn't know how I was going to actually go through the 40s, because as you know, ladies, that's a very susceptible time in the business. What were the fleshes and all the rest of it? But I was very lucky that I came into contact with yet another teacher, a great teacher again. So, with Jimmy Perry and David Croft, you have two enormously talented people in our business, but also want to impart the knowledge to you, which is fairly rare in our business, because very often you're left to flounder. But they didn't let you flounder. Well, the rest is history, ladies and gentlemen, what happened to Sue, and to Paul, and to Barry, and to Nikki, and all the rest of us that are here, Linda. It's history, so we don't have to say any of that. But I think that the cast that are here of Heidi High will only reiterate what I've said. I am eternally grateful for not just only being in a wonderful show, having wonderful writing, to actually do every week, but to know these two men, because they are the actual essence of why not only are we here, but why a lot of us have sustained our careers into our late 60s. Thank you very much indeed.
And this morning, now, let's get everybody please welcome to the stage, Bill Firstwing. Filming, and he used to come in and say, right, boys, it's 7 o'clock, another quarter of an hour,
Everybody sort of ready? So Arthur Lowe says, just go away, go away, go away. We haven't had breakfast yet. And the waiter would come up and say, what are you having this morning? He says, I'd like some ham off the bone, please. And all that classic stuff. He said, I'm sorry, we haven't got any ham. He says, well, I have a kibble. I want it with the head and the tail as well. This used to go on adventure. We were ready to go. And just going out of the restaurant, John Laurie would jump up and say, hold on! I only had a cup of tea and that was cold. wait till he had a cup of tea, it was warm. And he'd get out there, and of course, the boots. Oh, always trouble with Clive's boots. He used to get up there and he'd say, oh, I don't know where my boots are. Where are my boots? Do you know where my boots are? And Mary husband and her team had to go and find his boots, which he left outside his door. So eventually we got out to the location, of course, we were like a happy family, really, because, you see, David never shouted to anybody. Never did this. He just guided you through, which was a marvellous thing, to have somebody who was treating us rather like a lot of young schoolboys, which was marvellous, and just giving us, you know, ideas and how we could play this scene and so forth, which is fantastic. So I think that probably from there, probably something they don't realise is that they've done so much for charity through us all. I happen to get to know the Children's Hospice at Barnstaple in Devon, and I went along there one day to open, I think, one of their sort of high days and holidays for the children, because the children at the Children's Hospice is only, they only live till about 7 or 8 years old, you know, for kids. They had to run people down the ramp. And I said, this isn't good. They said, we've got a builder who'd like to put a proper ramp in for us and not just bumping down the steps. So they said that the council won't have it. I said, don't be ridiculous. So a friend of mine went to the council and they agreed to do this. After that, they then were going to build another children's hospice in Cornwall, which, because the overflow from Devon was, I'm not even, they were coping with children, were turning 200 away a year. They were coping with all these children from Devon, Cornwall, Somerset, and they wanted to build this one in Cornwall, because there's a huge area there. And I sort of got talking to them an awful lot, and they said, well, we're raising a few shillings, you know, with the through coffee mornings and things like that, and the WBS and everything. And I said, what's it going to cost? They said, £5 million. And the council wanted to charge the rent on the ground, which was only a waste dump. So, again, a couple of us went to the council, and it came in, and the bloke there said, oh, blimey, put that light out. I said, nice to meet you. I said, thank you very much. I've come to talk to you about this rent you want to charge the hospice that's going to be built here. So he said, well, I think we can perhaps sort that out. They had a committee meeting a couple of days later, and they said, you can have it free. They got the ground free. And then I got a team of two other people that went around the whole of Durban, Cornwall, Somerset, knocking on doors and so forth, and saying, you know, can you help us with this? Can you really sort of give us some money towards it? Or whatever you want to do, we've got to just really get the groundwork done. And we've got to get the foundations done really quickly. Well, this went on for about 3 or 4 months. And they talked about Dad's Army wherever we went. And it was very nice. I had three marvellous blokes with me. And eventually, at the end of that, they came to me in the hospice and said, what sort of reaction have you had? I said, it's been pretty good, yes. Oh, that's marvellous, thank you very much. I said, my friends here, three of my friends and myself, we got the theatre at Truro free to put on a couple of concerts, which we did, and they gave us the theatre free, and also there were a lot of people who were giving us some money during those concerts. And so they said, well, come to you guys. Well, it's really been So the legend of Jimmy Perry and David Croft helped us during those 3 months, and we collected £650,000.
Back and I went to North Acton and I ended up with Geoffrey Holland. because everyone was casting Heidi High at that time, and apparently, word has it, that they've been looking for Ted Bogus for 2 years. You'd be amazed who read for Ted Bogus. Harry Seacombe. How about that? What they call it? Ronnie. Who's the singer here? Ronnie Hill. Bless him. I knew Ronnie, lovely man. And there was a lot of people who read for Ted Bogus, and I went, and as I say, I'd been going for years on these little cameo parts, and all of a sudden, because when they started writing Ted Bogus, it was a minuscule part. By the end of it, when they got to the pilot, it was this thick, and most of it was mine. And my ass was going like a rabbit's nose. We went down wherever we went to film it, or the holiday camp, we came back, and I had that script in my hand until the day before we put it in the can on the Friday. And David Croft came up to me and snatched the script off me, and he said, if you don't know it now, you never will. And I went on, I'll never forget that first scene. It must have been 12 pages in the railway carriage. You remember that, David? And they did it once, and me not being an actor, I thought, good Lord, we've got through it, it's fantastic. And someone said, now we'll do the reversal.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I beg your pardon. And he said, well, you've got to do it on Simon now. I said, he hasn't said a frigging word. Do it on Simon. Anyway, I've had a wonderful time since then. Myself, Sue Pollard and Geoffrey Holland are the only three, I do believe, that have been principals in three of David Croft's shows. Two of my dear friend Jimmy Perry's shows. I have enjoyed it so much. You have made such a difference to my life. And I love you both. Thank you very much indeed.
Jimmy Perry and David Croft.
So many people have said, how do you two manage it? How do you do it? It's absolutely amazing. We're very flattered. But I'll tell you how we managed it, the secret of our success. Strangely enough, during the war, both David and I served in the Royal Artillery. In the Far East.
We won.
Yes, we won. He was a major, and I was a sergeant. Yes. And when we got home, we met for the first time. Well, Major Croft and Sergeant Perry have been working as a major and a sergeant for 40 years. That's the secret of it. Thank you.
For both Jimmy and David, a couple of very, very large bottles of champagne.
And there we have it. You have been listening to some stars of Perry and Croft sitcoms over the years. I must say it was an incredible day, and I was very, very lucky to attend. Really great to hear memories, particularly of Paul Shane. It was an absolute legend, and Frank Williams introduced me to Paul before the speeches, and what a lovely man, looking in great health considering he had a heart bypass a couple of years ago, and he was on really, really good form. Sue Pollard was a legend as well, and a fantastic voice, and she revealed to me she's also going to be joining the cast of Benidorm. So if you're a fan of Sue, keep peeled for Sue Pollard joining Benidorm later in the year. But in the meantime, Bressingham is on its way, and Mr. Rockliffe will be no doubt very busy organising that, and we'll have more information about Bressingham coming up in a future podcast. Do hope you can make it. It would be great to see you there. In the meantime, take care. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
So who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done?
Well, you know I said earlier I wouldn't interrupt Oliver again. Well, I lied. But once again, there's a very good reason for my doing so. Just a quick reminder to you all, we have the competition still running. That's going to be going for another couple of months or so, yeah? And we'll play out with the montage of clips that you need to identify. All you need to do to enter the competition and stand a chance of winning every single series of Dad's Army on DVD is to identify each of the 11 clips, put them in an email, and send them to me at james@dadsarmypodcast.com. Of course, you can send us all manner of other feedback as well, either relating to what you've just heard or anything about Dad's Army whatsoever. All the best, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with episode 48 to preview the Dad's Army Weekend 2010. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
Who do you think you...
One of you is a murderer. Very soon, I shall reveal the identity.
Well, can we fall out and have a bit of a smoke while we're waiting in, Sarge?
Yeah, no, I'd rather you didn't, if you don't mind.
Our Corporal Jones?
Yeah.
You see that word?
Yes, sir.
Have you done that?
Do you mean recently, sir?
Mensch, guck mal die Zeit. Typisch britische Untuchtigkeit. Es sind nun schon 10 Minuten her, seit wir abgeschossen worden sind. Und keiner hat uns gefangen genommen.
Kein Wunder, Sie verlieren den Krieg.
Ja, ja, natürlich. Sch, was ist das?
Just a minute, Captain. Yon drum holds 50 rounds. It will go on longer. Something like...
God, Mannering, you can hit pretty low when it suits you.
Sergeant Wilson, take your trousers off.
Tiddlypot.
What is it?
Who do you think?
I dreamt of in Marble Hall.
With a little hot oil and a feather. And when I awoke, I found it no joke. He was tanning, but...
Get out of here. With his gun. So who...
To Britain's Home Guard.
The Britons on guard.
It won't work, Walker.